Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From newsounds.org and the studios of WNYC in New York, this is the Soundcheck Podcast, our series of live in-studio performances. I'm John Schaefer. Socially conscious soul and gospel meets gritty post-punk in the music of the band Algiers. Their latest album, called There Is No Year, is full of gothic, even apocalyptic imagery, as the band takes an unflinching look at class, race, and capitalism and sets it all to a sturdy groove. Algiers is back in our studio today. They're going to play a couple of songs from the new album. This first one is called Dispossession.
Run around, run away from your America while it burns on the streets. I've been here standing on top of the mountain, shining down what I see. Seen a pyramid to pop out of confusion that he tried to release. Seen the sun coming over the horizon, straight across from the east. Seen the kings and the soldiers, all alone and consumed. Run and tell it to everybody on the ground, freedom is coming soon.
Everybody wants to break down. Come on.
That is the band Algiers, live in our studio. Dispossession is the first single from their new album called There Is No Year. And the members of the band, Franklin James Fisher on lead vocals and playing our piano, Ryan Mahan playing the bass and electronics, Lee Tesh on guitar, and Matt Tong behind our drum kit, with Tristan Griffin helping out on backing vocals and tambourine. And Frank, to you and the rest of the band, welcome back to our studio.
Thank you very much.
It's giving you another chance to play your favorite instrument.
I love this piano. It's the best piano in New York.
So let me ask you something. Early on in the song Dispossession, there's a line, you know, been standing here on top of the mountain. Mm-hmm. Is that a reference, an allusion to Martin Luther King's I Have Been to the Mountaintop speech?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, it's also, there's some references to a lot of things, hopes and dreams, you know, that's MLK and Obama and all this.
It's, right.
That song is actually a little bit of a parody, a self-parody. It was written maybe a year and a half ago, mm-hmm. almost 2 years ago. I thought I would kind of take all of this sorts of imagery and all the things that I normally would write about and just kind of I turn it up to an exaggerated dial.
Dial to 11.
Yeah, and just kind of get done with it. Do you know what I mean? That's probably like the last ones of, you know, the last in that sort of series of songs that I'll probably write.
Really?
Get it out.
Is anybody else buying this? Because
I think there's just such a plethora of things to write about and talk about.
Well, that's true.
So many things.
Exactly.
And you can be political in so many different ways.
Exactly.
So this album, does it feel like, I mean, Lee, there's a lot of guitar on that song, but not a lot that people might recognize as, I mean, you use the guitar almost as a sound producing device in a lot of the new record. Is that part of a larger kind of movement sonically in this record? Does it represent maybe a little step beyond the first two albums?
Not necessarily. I mean, I think we're always trying to just push boundaries and try new things. And I mean, each of us consciously and unconsciously had different things that we were trying to maybe do differently this time around or tackle. And, you know, I was trying to challenge myself as far as just new ideas with guitars or other instrumentation, and there's actually a few songs on this that I'm playing the guitar, but I'm not actually even playing it. I'm just feeding back and using a slide to control the notes,
right,
which I did on that song, and probably the next song we play as well. I don't press down any strings either, mostly, and that's a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah. And there's also, Ryan, although the band is the quartet, the sax player Skerrick appears several times on the new album, and that adds another kind of skrunky quality to the mix as well.
Yeah, he really does. He also featured on Can the Sub Bass Speak, which is a really fantastic track that we recorded in a second session on the album, and he just rips it, and he just burns down one of the songs that starts off almost like an you know, R&B way, and then all of a sudden he comes out of nowhere and says, nope, not what you think this is. Actually, we recorded another track with him that's not on the record that he also just tears up. So hopefully we'll be able to release that at some point.
Okay, so there are some Algiers basement tapes, apparently.
Oh, yeah. I was just going to add, it was real pleasant to actually meet him and work with him, because he's somebody that, in high school, he was outside of John Coltrane, like, the first saxophone player that I kind of knew by name and became a big fan of. And so then when he was asked to come in and do some things, it was like, you know, I felt like I was a kid again.
Yeah, and he only uses the one name, Skerrick. Mm-hmm. Frank, the last time you were here, mm-hmm. when you were warming up, you were playing a song by Nas.
Yeah.
Today, you were warming up with Thelonious Monk, among other things. So, I mean, what kind of musical, I mean, it seems like you have listened to and can potentially play anything.
I can't play anything.
He can.
I grew up with jazz, you know, it's my favorite kind of genre of music, but like also hip hop. And like when Ryan and I first met, it was our love of hip hop, and particularly like the sort of early 90s, like DJ Premier and people like that, who sampled from a lot of jazz records, and a lot of like jazz I came through via hip hop. You know, because that Nas song, "The World Is Yours," that's my Jamal. You know,
right? The great pianist. Yeah,
yeah, amazing. It all kind of occupies the same world. You know, it's nice to just be able to move your hands and create those sounds on your own.
Right. Yeah. You know, it's great to hear that because, you know, in the 90s when all this kind of crate digging began and you heard all these great samples, people were like, well, this is how the next generation of jazz musicians is going to grow up, is discovering it. And, you know, it's a nice theory, but to actually hear someone who put that into practice.
Well, yeah, that's what we do as a band,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
We use a lot of samples. We use a lot of references, not just musical references, and it kind of creates this world. And, you know, I think that's what most bands and most artists that we respect and look up to, that's what they do as well. It just so happens, I think people, it's just been a talking point that people think that we deliberately just try to mix genres as some sort of shtick. It's just the natural outgrowth of who we are.
Yeah, and I think that's how we write, actually. Yeah. Franklin and I particularly write in the vein of hip-hop. It might not sound like it, but it's definitely there, and that's why everything sits together. If you listen to the previous Danny Brown record, there is every genre under the sun on that record. There's punk rock, there's dub, there's UK electronic music, there's everything you can imagine, but because there's somebody rhyming over top of it,
right,
people accept it, but then if it's a band, it seems like, whoa, what are you guys doing? How does this work?
Much more so if it's a band with a singer who's black, that's not just playing, you know, retro R&B.
Right.
People just, they can't grasp it. They're like, what is this?
Well, I mean, even with like SoundCloud rap, where, you know, a lot of these guys are singing way more than they're rapping. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's just, once you get put into that little silo, you kind of stuck there for a lot of people.
Or can the Sub-Bass speak?
You can rail against it in certain ways. I mean, Can the Sub-Bass Speak addresses all of these things in a way that's much more articulate than I can in conversation, I suppose. And
well, now you talk about references. So let me ask you what the reference in the title of the album is, "There Is No Year." Mm-hmm. Where does that come from?
Our friend Blake Butler is a novelist. He grew up in Metro Atlanta, where we're from, and
where most of you are from.
Yes, Matt. Except for Matt. He's from Bournemouth, who won yesterday. What was it, 3-0?
3-1, I think.
3-1.
Yeah.
Still, it's a win.
Got to keep those football scores straight.
but the short story of it is going into this record, the main thing I really only focused on was writing and trying to figure out how to get across what I wanted to say and what I wanted to do. And when Ryan, after we, you know, while we were in the midst of recording the album, he was reading through everything I'd written. And he said that it reminded him a lot of Blake's writing, which to me was a huge, you know, compliment. And then, you know, that was one of the titles he suggested for one of the songs. But we liked it so much and the implications therein that we decided to use that for the album title. And, you know, it really, it's a curious title, and it invites the reader and or listener to come in and construct and assign their own meanings in order to help make the narrative themselves.
Yeah. That is one of the interesting things about that title is, I'm sitting here thinking, well, what does it mean?
Yeah.
And I suppose I could ask you what you think it means, but, mm-hmm. you know, what I think it means is a perfectly acceptable explanation as well.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure what it means, but that's okay.
Well, I think that's part of it. It's like you're playing with expectations, and when people think they understand something, it's like our friend Farbod, who designed the front of the record, there's a picture of a man falling from a tower. And then I found out later that, you know, there was another picture, which I wish we could have used, but we didn't have access to it. It was a guy performing a stunt, actually, in a movie from like 1979. And there's another picture after he's performed the stunt, you know, you see the massive net or whatever it is, that, and there's like press and people with champagne, and, you know, they're all celebrating, you know. And it's just kind of like whatever you think, you know, is entailed in the process of making a record or what you are marketed as, or, you know, everything. It's all artifice. So you have to really engage it and engage us if you want to know what this is really about or what it is that we're really doing.
And for me, I'm much less interested in actually what I'm hearing on the record than what is suggested on the record. So there's a lot of silences and a lot of threats and looming and interstitial qualities that are really interesting. And that wasn't something that we attempted to do, but that's the most compelling thing about the record. There's something around the corner. It could be as you're experiencing the album, or it could be as you're experiencing us and what happens after this is really interesting.
Well, the idea of negative space in the visual arts, you know, that can be a very powerful thing in the oral, the audio arts as well. Yeah. Algiers has now released their third record. It's called There Is No Year. Let's hear another song. What can you tell me about the song We Can't Be Found?
It's about loss. And my friend Mel, she has this theory that if you lose somebody, and people are like, well, you'll get over it, or you should get over it. Sometimes some people you're not supposed to get over, and they just kind of live with you, kind of like in the movies where, you know, there's a ghost that lives in the house, and the family learns to coexist with the ghost, you know. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a person. It could be anything, but it's just, you know, living with an absence, like Ryan spoke about earlier. It's just persistently there.
All right, let's hear the song. Once again, the band Algiers, they're playing live for us. This song is called We Can't Be Found. Once again, the band Algiers playing live in our studio. The song's called We Can't Be Found, a tune from their most recent album, the new one called There Is No Year. Again, Algiers playing a... You guys have been playing a run of record stores, right? Like a mini tour before heading off to Europe.
Yeah,
and then
just a little promo tour up the East Coast. It was cool.
Yeah. But what do you get out of... you know, those kind of small, you know, where it's not like a proper concert with all the trappings and trimmings, but a smaller thing like that. Is it a different experience for you guys?
It's intimate. And, you know, Dylan said something about how when you play in a small crowd, you know, it's just, you know, it's almost like you're naked up there and everybody is just, you know, you can see the eyes of everybody there and they're measuring you. Versus, you know, your honesty and your talent, you know, and it's just you don't have anything to hide behind. Mm-hmm. But it's also it strips away all of the fanfare, you know, and it's just you and the people who are there to support your music, and it's cool.
Yeah. Now, Frank, I want to ask you about you mentioned the cover art, mm-hmm. And there's the photo, but then there's also a lot of text. Mm-hmm. Is that when you said before that you were doing a lot of writing? Is that what you were working on?
Yeah, it's just, you know. It's a long form thing. We'll call it a poem, but it's not really a poem.
It's like a prose poem?
Yeah. And I just wanted to take snapshots of everything that I was experiencing and going through and things that we shared in terms of our experience and just kind of paste them up on a board, you know, and let people sort of draw their own conclusions and connections, you know.
What do you call this?
It's called misophonia.
Misophonia?
Mm-hmm.
Huh. You know, before these Soundcheck podcasts became an all-digital thing, back in the days when we were still, like, a broadcast, we did a segment about misophonia.
Really?
For folks who don't know, it's like, I guess I would describe it as, like, a fear of sound, but of, like, specific, like, mouth noise, or for some people it's, like, the knife and fork scraping the mm-hmm. plate, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, that totally. Or, you know, somebody like rumpling a chip bag or something like
that. So this whole ASMR thing that people are becoming hugely popular on YouTube, people who with misophonia can't stand that stuff.
Yeah. And that's kind of, you know, for a long stretch of time, when I wasn't able to have access to therapy or medication, like, it would drive me to a point of, like, extreme irritability, and I just wasn't a nice person to be around. But that's also kind of the state I'm in when I write oftentimes, and that's kind of the state I was in when I did a lot of the writing for this record.
Yeah. Well, now, how do you, as a touring musician, make sure you have that access?
Oh, well, I'm good now, you know. I'm in a healthier place than I was in the past, like, year or so. I think we're all working on individual things and trying to get grounded, but it's a daily struggle.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the striking things in among the darkness of some of the imagery, both in the songs and on the cover, is a line that isn't just there once, it's there a couple of times, mm-hmm. "We'll be okay through the darkness."
Yeah.
Is this an optimistic record somehow?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's very much about when all of the things that you have, you know, traditionally employed to assign meaning to the world around you no longer work, when those devices don't make sense. And it's a very personal thing, you know. It's not so grandiose as talking about, you know, specifically global politics or anything like that, but it's, you know, like, so many people close to me over the past few years, you know, have died, have gotten sick, you know, relationships have ended, and, you know. But also, if you want to speak specifically politically, you know, voting or the democratic process in general, you know, here and abroad in the UK, like, it just doesn't work anymore. Like, this impeachment thing that's happening right now is a farce, you know. Like, it's just, when nothing else makes sense, it's the idea of faith, you know, and faith that it's worth trying to, you know, get through the day and see another one.
So there's something to be said for perseverance.
Yeah.
A lot to be said for it. "There Is No Year" is the name of the latest from the band Algiers. They'll be back in New York on April 9th playing at St. Vitus here in New York, in Brooklyn. I certainly look forward to hearing more. It's always great to have new music from the quartet known as Algiers. Guys, thank you so much for coming in and playing once again for us, and congratulations on the new record.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure. Thank you for having us.
See you as always.
This is Soundcheck.
There'll be two in denial to know. Let the bow break and all the cards fall over. There'll be two in denial to know.
it's peace of mind.
That's all for this Soundcheck podcast. Check us out at newsounds.org for other performances, in-studio videos, gig alerts, weekly music roundups, and more. Our technical director is Irene Trudell. Our associate producer is Karen Havlick. I'm John Schaefer. Thanks for being with us. All or nothing.